be in verse 22 to 24 today, and speaking specifically about how working for King Jesus gives purpose and meaning to our jobs. Most people would say after they've worked for a while, they could use a little rehabilitation in the way that they see their job, the way that their job has affected their life. So we're looking at Colossians chapter 3, verses 22 to 24. Paul is an apostle of the church at Colossae. He's writing them a letter, and here's basically what he's saying, that when you discover and you rest your faith to believe that Jesus is supreme over things, over all things, everything changes. Your whole life is transformed. And even the way that it impacts your life on the job, whether it's home, inside the home, or outside the home. So let's look at verses 22 to 24 together, and then we're going to talk through this. And here we go, verse 22. Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything you do. Try to please them all the time, not just when they're watching you. Serve them sincerely because of your reverent fear of the Lord. Work willingly at whatever you do as though you are working for the Lord rather than for people. Remember that the Lord will give you an inheritance as your reward and that the master you are serving is Christ. If you ask people about their job and why they work, most people say something or imply or at least have heard and they've thought, yeah, that resonates with me. They say things like, I'm working for the weekend. They say things like, I'm working because I have to. No one is going to pay my bills, so I work to pay the bills. Or some people in their hearts may not say this out loud, but they're working to make a name for themselves. And there are certainly some people who are working because when they were 16 years old, their parents made them get a job and they haven't stopped working since. Anybody remember that? It's time. You're 16. Or whatever age you started, and 35 years later, here you are, still working, maybe not even asking the question. Last week, we talked about how work has a purpose, and the purpose of work isn't punishment. God isn't cursing the earth and punishing you and I by putting us to work, even though for many of us, it certainly feels like punishment. God, instead, has designed work to accomplish a divine purpose, and that is that he is loving you, providing for you, and caring for the world, and he does so through the work of human beings. So we are, as workers, a part of God's divine plan to be provided for and to be cared for. There is a mission in the work. When we are working, what are we to do? What is the mission? What are we trying to accomplish other than trying to sell the product, finish the project, or do the task? What's the mission? What are we supposed to be accomplishing in our work? You have in your notes a couple of fill-ins. Let me give them to you. There's two ways that we have for you to follow along today. One is a hard copy half sheet that you may have been handed when you walked in. And then for others, if you're interested, you have a digital device you can find in the church app, North Central Church. You will find a Sunday mornings tab, and in that you can follow along with some fill in the blanks, make some notes, and email it to yourself. I hope it's helpful for you as you try to grow on your own. Here we go. We're going to talk about the mission of our work today. There's two parts of the mission of our work. One is to worship God. The mission of our work is to worship God. And then there's a second part that's not as important, but after we kind of get that worship God part, there's another aspect that comes to life, and that's to win over people. So within our work, we can accomplish the task, finish the project, do the work, but there's something even bigger that's the mission in which we're working for, and that is that in our work, our mission is to worship God. And we start by asking ourselves, what difference does it make that we're Christians and belong to God? If you're a Christian here today, it's a reasonable question to say, when I'm working as a Christian, what does that mean? What difference does that make? How am I different? How am I unique in the way I approach my job? If I'm a Christian in the workplace, does that mean I have to be nicer than everybody else? I have to smile all the time? Does it mean that I have to be the one who puts in more money to buy the lunch when we fall short on the bill? Am I the one that coughs up the extra cash? Am I the one, as the Christian, who has to be nice and behave or be outspoken about my faith? Or am I the one that has to be right all the time? Am I less competitive than other people because I'm a Christian? The question is, as a believer, as a Christian, when you belong to God, how does that change the way that you approach your work? And all of this is great, but is that all there is to it? How does being a Christian, how does our Christian faith work itself out in the jobs? Is there more to be a Christian who works inside the home and outside the home? Now, keep this in mind. In Colossians, if you were to back up in Colossians, you will see that what Paul starts with is Jesus is not one of the various ways in which you can honor God. Jesus is not one of the angels. Jesus is not one of the spiritual, mystical ways in which you can feel good about your spiritual life or otherwise feel connected to God, who might be kind of a mystical force. In fact, what Paul says is that Jesus is supreme over all those things, and all the things that we are and everything we do comes under the submission of Jesus. That he is supreme over all things. And then Paul starts to describe how that fact that he's supreme over all things starts to affect the regular everyday areas of our life. Now, how many of you heard somebody say, I kind of appreciate the Bible, but I don't really take it as God's authority because it's kind of an old-fashioned, dusty old antiquated book. Anybody ever heard that reference? It's an antiquated, old-fashioned-y kind of a thing. And in some cases, it's irrelevant. And some people would be shocked to find out that the Bible gives specific instruction on every aspect of our lives. For example, in Colossians, Paul says that even your marriage, which was designed by God and implemented in the Garden of Eden in the book of Genesis, is under the supremacy of Christ. He says, even your parenting has been designed by God and is under the supremacy of Christ, meaning he rules over our parenting. Even our marriage has been designed by God and has been put under the authority of Jesus, and the supremacy of Christ shapes the way that we parent, the way that we're married, and the way that we work. And specifically, he says that husbands, love your wives. Wives, submit and respect to your husband. Children, obey your parents. Fathers, don't aggravate your children so that they will be discouraged. And all of that is the way in which Paul describes that the scriptures teach that God has created those things and he has designed those things as his perfect plan. And then he kind of comes along this one word, and it may have caught your attention, slaves. Slaves. Parenting, marriage, children, family. And then he gets to slaves. Now, keep this in mind, because I think it's so easy to make this mistake. And that is to believe that somehow by referring to slaves that it has been sanctioned by God. Instead, what we see is that all of those other areas that we just described, parenting and marriage and all of those and work, all of that has been designed by God and implemented principles on how to do those things effectively under the supremacy of Jesus. Now, then we get to slaves, and here's what we discover, that Paul is referencing a concept that God did not create, but he regulates it. He did not invent slavery, but he dictates and gives principles on how to, if you find yourself trapped or you find yourself ensnared or you find yourself indebted to somebody in what would be a kind of a slavery relationship, Scripture teaches us that God doesn't endorse it, he doesn't invent it, he doesn't plan it as his perfect will, but he does regulate it. Now, some of you may certainly recognize that this is also the Roman culture, and in the Roman culture, there were slaves. Sometimes slaves were indebted to somebody, and they just owed them money, and they became a slave. And the Old Testament regulates that all slavery would only be 6 years long, and after 6 years, there would be relief given. There's all different kinds of Old Testament regulations and rules in which this kind of obligation would be governed. But ultimately, you are in your job, so you learn to worship God. So if you find yourself, now some of you, I think, would recognize here that there is very, very few places in the world where you will find full-fledged slavery, but some of you may feel like slaves because of the nature of your job. You may feel like, I'm ensnared, I'm trapped, I don't know where to go. I don't know how to get out of this. I feel the weight of this. And what Paul is going to do here is this. He's going to say that God has a way in which we should respond when we feel like our jobs have enslaved us. That it's specifically shaping the way or regulating the way that believers who are ensnared in this kind of work situation should react. And we do that because we have a new master, because Jesus is supreme over all things. And God has ordained all of these things from creation except slavery. So the scriptures condemn trafficking. The scriptures condemn mistreatment of human beings. The scriptures actually describe that God himself values and cherishes every single life and every single human. So we believe that King Jesus is supreme over all these things, and we submit to his lordship in the way that we approach our work. And the way that it's described in the New Testament is that we have a new boss. We mentioned last week that it was a big boss, a bigger big boss. And if you told your boss this week that he's not the boss of you because there's a big, bigger boss, I want to hear your story. Catch me before we leave. I want to hear your story. I don't work for you. I work for the big boss. So the mission of our work is to worship God, and it applies to Christian employers, and it applies to Christian employees. So your identity as a person is saved and loved by Jesus, and it gives us new freedom in the workplace. The mission of your work is no longer focused on primarily elevating and serving ourselves. We're now free to make our work a means by which we worship God. So one of the reasons why we're careful about the use of the word worship in our church family. I mean, one example is that our church leaders wouldn't refer to our singing part of our Sunday service as worship. Do we worship while we sing? Yes. But there's a reason why we don't refer to it as worship, and it's because it has a beginning time and an ending time, and the implications are deep, which is that's the time to worship. It's going to start, it's going to end, and then we're going to have other parts of the service that isn't worship. It's something different. And the reason why we think that's kind of complicated and unhealthy theology is because it actually undermines the real truth, which is everything is worship. Everything we do is worship. It's just a question of where our worship is aimed, who we worship, what we worship, what has captured our heart. So when we sing, we like to call it the way in which we worship God through singing or through music. And it certainly, imagine that too. If that's the only time in which we have worship together is for 25 minutes on a Sunday morning, that means that 24/7 in between, before and after that worship segment, we're not worshiping. And the scriptures teach us that our work is worship, which feels like, I don't know about you, 24/7, all the time. We talked last week about how most of us, on average, will work for 10 straight years, 90,000 hours. That's a lot of time, where if it isn't worship, then it's something different. So work is a daily means by which we get to worship. So that means on Sundays we get to sing with all of our hearts, and that's worship. And on the weekdays we get to work with all of our might, and it's no less worship. No less. That means that both, whatever you do it for the glory of God. So the goal of the Christian life in our work is no longer to make the most money we can make. It would help, wouldn't it? But it's not our goal. It's no longer to elevate our own power, our own fame, or to become more and more comfortable. Rather, it's our desire to please God and make much of him. So how do we do that through the work? How do we do this for the glory of God? Let me give you three simple ways, and then I think it'll kind of put together a picture of what it looks like to worship God through our work. Number one, master your craft. Everybody's gifted. God has gifted you. He has given you a talent, and he has instructed you, and he has, Jesus has taught with these parables and word pictures and narratives, and he's basically said, you've been given a gift, it's a talent, don't bury it, invest it, use it. So you have a craft, discover it. One of the highlights of our Roots track that Pastor Yon is training is that there's a segment where we see that God has gifted us, we should discover it and start utilizing it. The DeWolfs mentioned finding some of the areas that they are in their sweet spots as God has gifted them and contributing that as a means of working for God and for his kingdom. And Jesus warns us against burying your God-given talent. Number two, we worship God through our work. We glorify God, number two, through doing the excellent work that God has gifted you to do. I have a hobby in my life, and that hobby is thrifty shopping. I really, really, really find energy by thrifty shopping. I don't know if it's a vice or a virtue. I have not decided. But I really enjoy it. And one of the things that I have come to realize is there are certain brands that you're looking for. And when you see that brand, it tells you something. It tells you when you see a specific brand that this is going to be quality material. It's going to be quality craftsmanship. It's going to wear correctly. It's going to wear for a long time, or it's going to hold up under the effort and under the work that you put it through. Brand is important when you're shopping. And when you do excellent work as a believer, you're technically working for a brand. Keep this in mind. And the brand that we're working for is King Jesus. All the work you do as a Christian should be tagged. It is. It's tagged with a specific brand, and it's the King Jesus brand. And God, who is infinitely creative and supremely brilliant, has created everything on the planet for us to engage in. And as we work for God, we reflect his image and we bear his tag or his brand on everything we do. So it should be of the highest quality. It should be of the best service. It should be with the deepest and most sincere integrity. Why? Because when you and I do something as believers, we're walking away from it with a brand on it, and that brand is believer, Christian, God's people. I love this concept that you read about here that was implied by Martin Luther, and here's one of the things that he didn't say this specifically, but here's basically what he said. A shoemaker who's a Christian doesn't stitch little crosses on his shoes to glorify God. He makes and delivers to his neighbor the highest quality shoe his neighbor can find. Let me say that again. He was implying that to make things Christian, we don't add Christian symbols to it. We do the best work with the best quality, and we leave the brand name King Jesus' work. Master your craft, do excellent work, and number three, help create culture. This is how we worship God. We help create culture. God has invented culture. Every part of the world has a culture. Every tongue and tribe has a culture. God sent you to the world to make your contribution. And you can contribute to the culture by hunting and harvesting. You contribute to the, and I'm so glad for this, you contribute to the culture by baking sweet cookies. You contribute to the culture by serving people in restaurants, by cooking and by cleaning the spaces that we live in and work in, by creating beautiful music and beautiful art. You contribute to the culture by crafting a latte. Have you had the right latte yet? Pumpkin spice, have you had that? This is what, I gave you a little challenge last week. Here's your challenge this week. When you take your first sip, right in front of the barista, sip your pumpkin spice. I want you to look him in the eyes and say, glory to God, sweet Jesus. Sweet baby Jesus, thank you. And when they look surprised, say, no, thank you for contributing to culture. When we dig a garden, I've mentioned this before, but I love this. Did you know that gardening, landscaping gardening, is the number one hobby in the world? And how many of you who have done some gardening before, you would testify that there's something about putting your hands in the dirt and getting that seed planted and the flower and the plant to bloom. There's something that makes you come alive, right? I'm assuming that's part of the reason why you do it. Here's what I'd like to suggest to you. The reason that is because you're helping to really harvest the intention of God on our planet to create culture. And I remember the phase of my life where I discovered flowers and started wearing them. I did that for about 2 weeks, and I was like, I shouldn't wear flowers. I'm just kidding. It was 4 weeks. I'm just kidding. But I remember discovering flowers and appreciating flowers. And I remember discovering harvesting things. And I recognize now that it isn't the only way that we can help contribute to culture, but also by design and architecture and serving and teaching, literacy and books, raising children, adopting foster children, nursing someone back to health. All of these culture-building elements are a gift from God and a reflection of our supreme creator who supplied all of this to us to enjoy and to reflect him well. All of these ways help us to worship God. So what makes all of this our worship? What makes it all worship? It's an expression of your affection and your adoration to the Lord. Whatever you do it for the glory of God. And you've probably had your child or your grandchild bring you the project that they made in school and then hand it to you. And then to wait and see your reaction because you better love it. I remember when my daughter Kaylee, she was our first one to do art projects and bring them home. I remember when she brought me a ceramic bird. I hate birds. I mean, I don't care for birds very much, I should say. Their beaks and their claws and their feet and their tiny little fragile rib frame cage and all, everything about it. There's nothing about, I should not say stuff like this because there's always like a bird lover or something. I mean, every time I say I don't like something, someone's like, I have a collection of pigeons. They're my children. I've named them all. But she gets done and she offers it to me, and here's what she's intending. Her effort, when she put effort into that project, her effort was aimed at doing something special for her parents. The work that went in, she put that effort in and she made this with her parents in mind. The finished product is a gift that wasn't given to her siblings or to her teacher. The gift was given to her parents. The effort and the gift and the nature of it was all designed in her own heart as a means by which giving something special to her parents. And this is how, as believers, the gospel transforms our work. Whether you're scrubbing the walls or the corners of your kitchen floor when you're working in the home, whether you're dusting up, tidying up after a dust storm in your house, whether you're got a new project going on at work, here's the idea. Paul is saying that the effort that we're giving, the gift that we're offering, is not primarily our coworkers and our authority or our supervisor or our boss or the owner. Instead, it is being offered up to King Jesus. He is the recipient of the product, the effort of our work. So we are now free in our hearts to make our work a means by which we win over people. We worship God, and also there's another aspect of our work, which is to win over people. And to win over people means that we are working a specific way. How is that? Well, for starters, your boss, your employer, your supervisor, your customer, your client, your patient, your children, your spouse, these are the people that we're trying to win over. How do we do that? Well, there's a mission in our work. And if the mission in your work is spot on, then you will effectively begin winning them over. And that is by serving someone's needs and someone else's interests above your own. That means serving and submitting at work. Before you sermonize at work, before you hand someone a sermon that you want them to listen to, it means before that you are submitted to and surrendered to the supervisor, the employer, the earthly boss, the customer, the client, or the patient, you're serving and submitting before you start handing them sermons to listen to and you represent God well. So our mission is to demonstrate a whole new attitude in our work, marked by a willing, wholehearted submission to authority. Here's the three things that Paul says. Paul says, please your boss all the time. Do impressive work, not just when they're watching. Do impressive work when they're not watching. Why? Because I'm not doing it for myself, I'm doing it for someone else. Work like you're always being watched. Some of you are already aware of this, but you probably are being watched on surveillance cameras anyway. But if you just translated that to God always has his eyes on his people, and it's his desire for us to work in such a way as to please our authorities that God has put in our life and on the job. Also, work willingly. Do your work with eager willingness. No believer who belongs to God should be dragged into work, should be dragged into the project, should be dragged into putting up an effort on the job. That instead, we Christians should be the first in line to express our willingness with wholehearted sincerity, not an agenda that accomplishes something for ourselves, but wholehearted sincerity to contribute to the whole goal, the whole mission, the whole project, the whole end result. Also, work wholeheartedly. Do your job with wholehearted sincerity. Now, if you want to blow people's minds at work, express joy in the work that God has given you. If you want to blow their mind, mention to one of them here or there that you really enjoy work. Mention to them that you find a lot of satisfaction in the work that God has given you. So if you submit and serve your boss or your coworker or your spouse, here's what this means. It means you're working for their success, not your own, for their comfort, not your own, for their recognition, not your own recognition, for their promotion, not your own promotion. It's easy to get someone's attention, to stand out, to win someone over through the way that you work. I remember my very first real job, and it was at a shoe store called Tom McCann. You remember Tom McCann? I miss Tom McCann. Even more so, I miss Penn Can Mall. That's where my job was. So I would drive up to Penn Can Mall, and I got the job through a youth group friend who was here at North Central Church, and we were a youth group. We were involved in the youth group together, and she kind of helped me get this job with my boss, who I remember her name is Beth. And after a few weeks of working together with this youth group member, I remember Beth saying something to me that obviously I've never forgotten. She said, can you send me some more of those church kids? And I said, well, it's going to cost you. I do work on commission as a broker. Now she said, can you send me some more of your church kids? And here's what she said. She said, because the two of you, you church kids, you show up when you're on the schedule, and you do everything I ask you to do. And I remember thinking to myself, that's an option? Some people aren't doing that? And I'll never forget that. And sometimes I mention to my own kids who are starting work, I mention to them, it's not hard to stand up, show up when you're scheduled, do what you're supposed to do, and bam, someone thinks that you're a gift from God who just showed up as sent and delivered to them. I mean, you can win people over just by doing sometimes just the minimum of enjoying and doing what you're supposed to do. I love that idea that God allows us to win people over through our work, through something like that. So, lastly, what are you working for? What's driving your effort and your attitude? Something is driving your attitude. Something is driving your effort. Ultimately, the evidence, listen to this, this is so important. This is so important because there's a lot of us who feel like when Jesus comes alive in my heart, I'm going to sing louder. That's why I sing louder. I'm going to raise my hand higher. And there's all of that is true. That there's something that comes alive in us when we're singing, something that comes alive in us when we're praying. But I wanted to submit this to you. What if it's possible that more comes alive? And that is that there's a freedom to enjoy the work that we're doing. Not just the work that we're doing for the church, with the church on Sundays, but also all the work that God has set before us, no matter what it is, whether we feel like we're ensnared, we're trapped, or whatever, but we have the ability, the power, because of the gospel coming alive in us to work in a way that we delight what we're doing and who we're doing it for, King Jesus. There is a new power, a new intrinsic motivation that has come to life, and that's the power of your desire to please God. Mostly because of all that he's done for you. Not to build an identity for yourself, but to build the brand, the King Jesus brand. There's two specific ways in which treasuring Jesus transforms your daily work. Number one, I just mentioned it, you have a new motive. There's a new motive. Because I'm not working for God's approval, because I'm not working so God notices me, because I'm not working to collect as much money and treasure before life ends or before I retire, because I'm no longer working for a big name, big success, I have a new motive, and the scriptures say it is specifically the fear of God. Do I fear my vocational authorities, supervisor, boss, owner? Sure, I have some respect there as needed, right? But there's something even more, and that is I have a fear of God. What does that mean? That means that I'm answerable in even bigger ways to the Father in heaven more than I'm answerable to my boss. Secondly, we have very specifically treasuring Jesus transforms your daily work because you have a new reward. We have a new reward. Our reward didn't, how many of you just, you remember how fast the motive expired to work for your paycheck? And most people you talk to over time will say things in the workplace like, yeah, it's really, my biggest motivator is not really the money. It's meaning, it's value, it's contributing, it's being a part. But we have a new reward, and we get to remind ourselves that I'm not working for a weekly paycheck. I'm not working primarily for a retirement pension. I am working and remembering that my real reward is going to be after I pass on from this earth. I have a treasure in heaven that is more valuable to me than anything anybody could pay me, any compliment someone can pay me, that these rewards Jesus provides are far greater than anything the world offers. Also, it lasts forever. These rewards are eternal. And so this principle of a new reward helps us produce a better and healthy attitude towards our work. It allows us to do the unpleasant tasks that God has before us with patience. There's rewards promised and waiting for believers in heaven after a lifetime of faithful service. So in your day-to-day work, you don't have to sacrifice everything important for your own material wealth. You don't have to give up on the most important things to achieve things that are less important. Your treasure is now secured in heaven. Your ultimate reward has been secured for you by Jesus. This is why you work, and this is why work is far more important than what you're actually doing. You're actually doing something even better, even greater, and that is that you are occupying the time, building the brand before eventually we all gather together with the greatest reward, which is the inheritance of being with and worshiping Jesus for eternity. Let's pray together. Father.